Picture a struggling tech company hemorrhaging money, its founder writing personal checks each month just to keep the lights on. By any rational measure, this venture was a disaster waiting to collapse. Yet within a decade, it would sell for $7.4 billion and fundamentally reshape how stories are told. This wasn't luck. It was the result of navigating one of business's most treacherous tightropes, balancing artistic vision with commercial survival. What made Pixar's journey extraordinary wasn't just the groundbreaking animation or beloved characters. It was discovering that creativity and commerce, often seen as natural enemies, could actually amplify each other when approached with wisdom and courage. When that unexpected call came in November 1994, the proposition seemed absurd. Steve Jobs, still reeling from failures at Next Computer, wanted help with another struggling venture, a company burning through his fortune with little to show beyond some impressive computer graphics demos. The commute alone seemed reason enough to decline, a grueling journey across the Bay Bridge that would steal precious time from family. Yet something felt different during that first meeting. Jobs wasn't peddling another reality distortion field fantasy. He was genuinely seeking partnership, admitting he needed help figuring out the business model. Visiting Pixar's unremarkable building across from a Chevron refinery revealed the dire truth. Jobs was personally covering monthly shortfalls after investing nearly $50 million. The rational choice was clear: run away. Then came the screening room. Early Toy Story footage showed something extraordinary. Characters moving with unprecedented fluidity, lighting demonstrating computing power beyond anything imaginable. Light bounced off Woody's badge with perfect physics. Buzz's spacesuit reflected its environment like real metal and plastic. This wasn't just technical achievement, it was magic. Pixar felt like a collision between a college dorm and Halloween theme park. Animators personalized cubicles with action figures and sketches alongside complex rendering equations. One animator recorded himself walking with a cowboy stance to perfect Woody's gait. John Lasseter spoke about his team with genuine reverence, brilliant artists who developed new software to animate cloth movement and create realistic fur. Yet beneath this creative wonderland lurked devastating business reality. RenderMan, their Academy Award-winning software, had only 50 customers at $3,000 each, generating perhaps $3 million annually. Animated commercials were sporadic and barely profitable. Beloved short films like Luxo Jr. won critical acclaim, but generated zero revenue. The Disney contract revealed Pixar's complete entrapment. An exclusivity clause locked John Lasseter and Pixar's creative team into working solely for Disney until 2004, covering any creative work, not just animation. Disney controlled Pixar's most valuable asset for nearly a decade. The financial terms were equally devastating. After Disney's distribution fees, marketing costs, and overhead charges, Pixar's profit share shrank below 10%. A blockbuster earning $346 million globally would net Pixar only $4 million annually, woefully inadequate when animated features cost $50 to $100 million to produce. The sequel rights clause gave Disney ultimate leverage. They could make sequels without Pixar or use this threat to force unfavorable extensions. Confronting Jobs about this one-sided deal revealed something unexpected. He showed no interest in defending the past, displaying uncharacteristic openness to criticism. "We were truly partners, facing the challenge together." That collaborative spirit would prove crucial for the fundamental question ahead. Could we transform this seemingly hopeless situation into an opportunity for independence? By summer 1995, Jobs worried Disney's marketing positioned Toy Story as children's entertainment, missing its sophisticated humor and emotional depth. Though he engaged Disney executives, they ultimately had to trust decades of marketing expertise. Financial analysis revealed a sobering reality. Pixar films needed to consistently reach $150 to $180 million domestically for sustainability, a nearly impossible target. Only two Disney films had ever exceeded $150 million, Aladdin at $217 million, and The Lion King at $313 million. Other studios' animated offerings typically peaked around $50 million. This challenge led to a comprehensive four-pillar strategy, dramatically increase Pixar's profit share from Disney to at least 50%, take Pixar public to raise capital and gain leverage, accelerate production from one film every 3 years to one every 18 months, and build a sustainable creative culture, maintaining quality while increasing output. Going public was the linchpin, the only viable path to raise capital and negotiate better profit sharing. But timing was critical, before or after Toy Story's release. Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley toured Pixar's facilities, declared themselves speechless, then politely declined. Goldman suggested postponing. Morgan Stanley cited blockbuster unpredictability. The rejection stung deeply. Roberts & Stephens, a boutique investment bank, lacking Goldman's prestige, proved the breakthrough. Despite Pixar's risks, their commitment committee approved. Sometimes, the biggest believers aren't the most prestigious. They're the ones willing to see beyond conventional wisdom. After 16 years, Pixar's future hinged on two November 1995 numbers, Toy Story's opening weekend and the IPO stock price. The invitation-only premiere at Disney's El Capitan Theater drew Tom Hanks, Tim Allen, and Michael Eisner. The final version mesmerized everyone. The audience applauded through the closing credits. Opening weekend delivered nearly $30 million, projecting over $150 million total. On November 29th, Pixar went public under symbol PIXR. The stock soared from $22 to $39 per share, a $1.5 billion market value that made Jobs a billionaire. Toy Story became 1995's biggest film, with nearly $192 million domestic. Success exceeded all expectations, but the hardest work lay ahead, transforming capital into sustained business success while maintaining creative excellence. With $140 million raised and films scheduled every 18 months, Pixar faced massive workforce expansion. The critical decision? Creative approval. John Lasseter advocated for complete creative control with Pixar's story team. Despite the unprecedented risk of giving untested directors control over $100 million productions, leadership bet on creative talent, a radical Silicon Valley approach rejecting Hollywood's executive oversight. Pixar's strategies centered on four non-negotiables: creative control, favorable release windows, true 50-50 profit share, and proper brand recognition. Despite initial positive signals from Michael Eisner, Disney went silent. By November 1996, negotiations stalled on branding. Eisner refused equal billing, fearing future competition. Weeks later, Eisner proposed a brilliant solution. Disney would get rights to buy Pixar stock in exchange for equal branding. This addressed everyone's concerns. Eisner could justify sharing credit if Disney benefited from Pixar's growth, while Pixar maintained independence. The final agreement delivered everything: creative control, optimal release windows, true 50-50 profit splits, and perceptually equal branding. By October 2005, sustainability concerns led Jobs to seek a buyer, Disney. Timing proved perfect, as new CEO Bob Iger, unlike Eisner, emphasized animation as central to Disney's identity and wanted Pixar's approach to transform Disney animation. On January 24, 2006, Disney announced its $7.4 billion acquisition, making Jobs Disney's largest shareholder. John Lasseter became chief creative officer of both studios, while Ed Catmull became president of both. The results were extraordinary. Disney's stock nearly quadrupled, Pixar continued producing hits, and Disney Animation experienced a renaissance with films like Frozen. The profound insight? Pixar embodied the middle way philosophy. When Jobs joined in 1994, Pixar possessed extraordinary artistic wizardry but lacked momentum, like a starting artist. Success required developing strategy and structure without killing creative spirit. In a world forcing choices between passion and pragmatism, Pixar's story offers a different path. The magic isn't choosing one over another, it's walking the tightrope between them, trusting that the tension itself creates something extraordinary.